Jessica pulls blankets from the portable warmer and lays them over Rose as I take hold of her hand. Come on, Rose. Fight it out. And she does. Wherever she's gone within herself, she keeps fighting. For every breath, every heartbeat. As we pull into the hospital and the ambulance slows to a halt, I know that making it this far was just one battle. The war is ahead. It's in the surgical room. But I don't know if she has enough strength left in her to endure. The ambulance doors are thrown open. I run alongside the stretcher as Rose is wheeled through into the ER. I give the doctors on call every scrap of information I can. It's only moments before she's whisked away into surgery. Her hand is pulled from mine and all I can do is watch as she disappears behind the double doors and into the heart of the hospital. I'm standing in the middle of the ER, still watching the doors as though she might get up and walk back through them. The sounds and smells of the ward start to creep into my senses. The beep of monitors, the scent of industrial cleaners, the voices of patients and nurses and doctors. But all I see is the absence of Rose. My phone buzzes in my pocket. I finally break free of my stasis and look at the screen to see a text from Leander.
Just a friendly reminder. Whether your girlfriend lives or dies, we have a non-negotiable deal. My driver will be at the main entrance of the hospital at 6 p.m. sharp to take you back to Boston for your flight.
I blow out a deep breath and look toward the door for a long moment before I type out my reply. I'll be there. I pocket my phone. I look one more time at those doors, and then I turn away. I will do whatever it takes to save her. Out of time. Fionn.
Hard to say goodbye, isn't it?
A voice says, and I inhale a sharp breath as I turn toward the door. I fumble to hide a tissue, but there's no fooling the sharp, cutting gaze of Sloane Sutherland. Or more accurately, Sloane Kane. Her eyes shift between me and the backpack next to my chair.
Heading out soon?
Yeah. And then I turn back to Rose to watch the rhythmic rise and fall of her chest as she sleeps. In a minute. I don't watch as Sloane enters the room. I just want to absorb every moment with Rose that I can. There isn't a detail I've not tried to carve into my memory, from the swirling waves in her hair to the precise angle of her nose to the thick fringe of her dark lashes. I wonder how much she'll change when I'm gone. How much I'll miss. I'll think about her every day. The absence of her will be my first conscious thought in the mornings. My memories of her will be the last thing I think about when I fall asleep. I'll hear her voice in my dreams. Her teasing laugh, her broken cry. How do I know? Because all those things are already true. And the only thing that will keep me going through this torture is knowing that my absence will keep her safe. I swallow as Sloane takes a seat across from me. Where's Rowan?
Going back to our car with Connor to see if the guy who took Lark really did put explosives in our vehicle like he claimed when Lachlan found him. Didn't really want to leave it there, just in case.
Lachlan and Lark?
They just finished up at the police station. They'll be on their way here soon. Leander's people managed to sweep through Abe's apartments to remove anything we wouldn't want the cops to know. So, thank you, Fionn. I know you gave Leander a head start.
I nod, blowing out a long breath.
Your brothers. Do they know you're leaving?
No.
Where are you going?
I shake my head. I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
Why not?
Sloane, I can't, I say. Brooking no argument. I pin her with eyes I know are bloodshot and framed with dark circles. Please don't ask. I won't tell you. Her expression gives nothing away as she nods once. I'm not sure what she's looking for when she searches my face. Maybe a hint of an answer. Maybe the secrets that live beneath my skin. I know she's good at carving them from souls, just like I'm good at keeping them. With a quiet sigh, she shifts her gaze to Rose, lifting a delicate hand to sweep the fringe from her brow. Rose doesn't stir.
Is she okay?
I think so. I place a kiss on Rose's knuckles, her hand warmed between both of mine. Infection is a risk. It's going to take a while for her to recover. But there doesn't seem to be any brain ischemia, thank God. She just needs time. Sloane nods in my periphery.
I'm sorry you won't be here for it, Fionn.
She whispers, and the burn in the back of my throat nearly chokes me. Me too, I manage.
You got her past the hardest part.
Did I? We lock eyes across the gentle rise and fall of Rose's chest. Sloane is so stoic. Or at least she is when Rowan or Lark aren't around. But I see the wisp of sadness in her eyes that she can't hide beneath her lethal mask.
I don't know,
she says, and we break the moment between us to look at Rose.
Maybe, maybe not.
God, I fucking hope so. I just want her to be happy, to be safe, to thrive, to know she's so fucking loved, even from a distance.
You saved Bentley,
Sloane says, snapping me out of my thoughts of what the days and weeks and months ahead will be like. When I meet her eyes, she offers a faint smile.
Lark is so grateful.
I nod. He didn't really appreciate it, the cheeky fucker.
Yeah, he's a bit of a curmudgeon. Probably why he and my cat Winston seem to get along. Rose told me about Barbara. We could have made it a trio.
I try to force a smile, but it doesn't take. All I can think of is Rose, with that fucking raccoon clutched in one hand, her grin diabolical. She laughed so freely when Barbara was gripped to my face under that towel. Christ, what I wouldn't give to relive that moment right now so I could hear her again. There are so many moments that filter through my mind. Rose's teasing smile at Sandra's, the black yarn balled in her lap. Her guileless eyes as she sat on the edge of the bathtub with her injured leg on mine. The love that I could feel in her touch when she traced the lines of my face in the shadows of the haunted house. What if I never see or feel or hear those things again? Sloane rises, breaking me away from questions that consume me.
We'll make sure she's okay. One of us will be here when she wakes up. I'll give you some time to say goodbye. But I won't go far.
I trust Sloane to keep her word, not for my benefit, but for Rose's. That only makes me trust her that much more. Thank you. I appreciate it. She doesn't react as I turn my attention back to Rose, but she lingers. I can feel her sharp eyes watching, but for what? I'm not sure.
If you'd told me where you're going, I wouldn't be giving you this.
Sloane says as she passes me a folded piece of paper. My brows draw tight as I take it with a tentative hand. I open it under her watchful gaze. Sloane Kane, Data Science Department, Clinical Development Operations, VMAX, Radnitska, Sesta, 8118, 10,000, Zagreb, Croatia.
If you want to send her anything, send it to that address in my name. It's the local office for my employer, VMAX. The internal post will make sure I get it, and I'll ensure it gets to Rose with the appropriate level of secrecy. I promise.
I swallow, my eyes darting between Sloane and the paper in my hands. How did you know?
Lark. She called Leander. Managed to get it out of him.
She shrugs when the unvoiced question still lingers in my eyes.
The promise of undrugged muffins sealed the deal. She had to swear on her life she wouldn't tell Lachlan or Rowan.
But, Sloane waves my concern off.
She won't. She knows as much as Leander does that the boys would chase you down and fuck shit up, and probably make everything 10 times worse than it already will be. Like I said, she's grateful for what you did for Bentley.
A shard of hope seems to pierce right between my ribs, stealing my breath. Hope can be beautiful, but it can also be brutal. It can keep your head above water just long enough to drown you in the next wave. I'm scared of what will happen if I hold on to it, but I'm never going to let it go, no matter what tsunami I have to swim through. I fold the paper and slip it into the interior pocket of my jacket before I take Rose's hand. What if she doesn't want this anymore?
I don't know, Fionn. Some broken hearts can't be sewn back together.
Sloane's gaze drops from mine, landing on Rose and lingering there.
But maybe that's why you have to leave yours here for her.
She doesn't look my way when she turns and heads toward the corridor. I watch her walk away, Rose's hand still clutched in mine, the address like a pulse in my pocket, a beacon I can cling to. When Sloane reaches the door, she pauses, resting her hand on the frame.
Rowan and Lachlan say you're the best of them. What that means to your brothers might be different than what it means to you.
Sloane says as she looks at me over her shoulder, her hazel eyes bright with a challenge.
So prove it to the only person who counts.
I give her a resolute nod. Sloane gives me one in return, and then she disappears down the corridor. My phone buzzes with a message in my pocket. Probably a reminder from Leander, or the driver. I glance up at the clock on the wall. 5 minutes is all we have left. I turn all my attention back to Rose. Rose, I say, stroking her hair off her forehead. Wake up. Nothing changes in her. Not the pulse that flows in a slow, steady rhythm beneath the fingers I keep wrapped around her wrist. The unanswered message buzzes a second time. How 2 minutes have passed already, I just don't know. Sparrow, I whisper, hoping the alias will jar something in her subconscious. But there's still no change in the cadence of her inhalations, no flutter in her eyes. I squeeze her hand. I hold it to my lips. But I know how much blood she's lost and the power of the medication coursing through her veins. And as much as I want her to wake up so I can have one last moment, I can't help but think that it might be a mercy for her that she's unconscious. What's the point in waking up just to say goodbye again? My eyes drift to the clock, no matter how hard I will them not to. 2 more minutes left. And just like when we wheeled her into this hospital, every second counts. I press my free hand to her chest, right over her heart. The steady rhythm is imprinted in my flesh, carved all the way to the bone. Our time is up, Rose. A tear breaches my lashes and slides down my cheek. This can't be some no-strings-attached, friends-with-benefits situation anymore. That's over now. My final hope, that she'll be so angered by my words that she will wake up, snuffs out when she doesn't even stir. The shots fired over the bow of my ship just land in still water. There's no volley, no fight to meet me in the fog. She might not be able to see it, but I give her a smile, because even in the dark and silent solitude of unconsciousness, she still sees right through me. It's over, because I love you, Rose. I'm sorry I spent so much time and effort trying not to. It was only because I didn't think I was safe for you. I don't think I knew how to fit into your wide open world. But from the very first glance, from the first word, I was caught in your gravity. I wanted to be near you, and I couldn't bear the thought of hurting you. But lately, that's the only thing in our cards, it seems. I shift my gaze to the tarot deck resting on her side table. The lover's card is flipped over and waiting for her. 1 minute left. I know the driver will probably come to find me if I'm late. And I don't want Leander Mays or any of his people anywhere near my Rose. It's a slash across my heart when I rise from my chair. Another when I lay her hand across her waist. I fear the wound may never heal when I lean down to press a kiss to her lips. Her exhalation warms my skin. I breathe her in, the sweetness of her cinnamon scent marred by the clinical room that surrounds us. She was never meant for a place like this, and yet she keeps coming back to it. I sweep the hair from her face and try to imprint the image of her into my mind. Then I take a card from the interior pocket of my jacket, glancing over my words, hoping I said enough and not too much. Dear Rose, the sparrow is such a simple bird. I always wondered why you chose it, or why it was chosen for you. Because you're the most exciting, outrageous, intimidating, incredible person I know. Breaking your heart was undoubtedly the worst thing I've ever done. Leaving is the only right thing to do, even though it's the hardest. I can't tell you where I'm going or what I'm doing or when I'll be back. And I know that's unfair to you. It might be enough damage done that you can never forgive me, and I understand if that's true. So I will love you enough for the both of us. I don't expect anything in return. I'm so sorry I can't be with you right now. I promise I'll be back to tell you I love you in person. I should have told you so many times. Like when we walked home from Sandra's and you asked me things no one has ever taken the time to know. Or when I came into the hotel room in Boston and you were standing by the window. I forgot how to even form the words to tell you how stunning you were. Or the time you fell asleep on my chest. I stayed awake so long just to feel your breath on my skin and imagine a life I know now that I could have had if I had just let my fears go. I've loved you all that time, Rose Evans. And I won't be stopping. Not ever. Look out for yourself. Don't cause too much mayhem, if you can help it. Love, Fionn. I look up to the clock. I'm out of time. I leave the card on the side table. I trace the smooth skin of her cheek. And then I lift my hand away. With one final look at Rose, I turn and leave.
Script. Rose. I'm sitting in my RV, visualizing every detail of the show to come. The exact turns I need to take, the pitch and whine of the engine, the smell of exhaust. It's my first performance since I got out of the hospital and came home to Texas. The first off-season show of the year. And it's the first time I haven't felt the swell of excitement for the metal cage that's been my home for the last decade. Usually, I'm buzzing to perform. The first shows after a few weeks off are always my favorite, because they're the closest it will ever feel to that fateful day when I rode the globe of death for the very first time. I was only 16. I remember my hand trembling as I firmed my grip on the handle of my dirt bike and crept forward until I entered the metal cage. I'd been working for the circus for a year by that point, doing all the jobs I could possibly volunteer myself for, no matter how shitty they were or how long they took. I begged Jose for that chance in the cage. There wasn't anything to prove I could do it, no credentials other than I knew how to ride a motorcycle. I had nothing to go on but guts. I didn't actually know if I'd be able to pull that throttle back with enough precision to spin through the globe until I was either upside down without losing control completely or chickening out and falling flat on my face. I just had belief. And as soon as I tried it and experienced the rush of adrenaline, there was no turning back. I chased that high every time I got on my bike and faced the globe. Being in the cage felt like freedom. But now, it feels like I'm trying to squeeze myself into a life that doesn't fit me anymore. It's as though I've taken the two halves of my cast and put them back together and taped them on. Even though I could run and jump and swim and kick, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm just limping along, coping with a broken heart by encasing it in a familiar routine. I take a deep breath. My hand presses over the scar on my side. Sometimes I'm sure I can still feel the burn of pain beneath my skin. Maybe it's a phantom ache, one I imagine so I don't let myself forget that everything that happened was real. Not that my girls would let me forget about them, at least. Lark. Good luck tonight, Boss Hostler. Thinking of you, you'll rock it. Sloane. I'd say break a leg, but please don't. Lark. We don't want anything getting in the way of your mad dancing skills. A photo comes in from Sloane next. The girls are standing on either side of a cardboard cutout of me, a photo they took at Sloane's wedding, where I was pissed drunk at the little pub after the ceremony, dancing with an inflatable dinosaur as Rowan sang The Rocky Road to Dublin. I'm not sure whose sunglasses I was wearing, but I liked them, so I kept them. That T-Rex was the real MVP. Miss you, Ballybroads. See you in August. I know that subtle reminder is not what they want to hear. August is still 8 months away, and they were bummed that I didn't make it for Christmas. I just didn't think I could bear it, being around two other couples, especially not the brothers of the man I love who just disappeared. Especially not when those brothers have questions that I simply can't answer, because I don't know why he left or where he went. Sloane and Lark told me what happened that day in Portsmouth at the bakery after I passed out, of course. The blood, the tears, the hospital. The things he said that I didn't hear when I was unconscious, clinging to life. How I was saved by his hands. I slide my phone into the interior pocket of my jacket, and then grab my helmet and get ready to leave. When I pull my door open, Baz is standing there, his fist poised and ready to knock. "Hello, young sir," I say with a theatrical bow. "What are you up to?" Baz shrugs, then holds a white envelope up for me to take.
"This came for you."
"A letter?" My gaze pans the circus grounds, as though the mystery might unravel itself. I pin my attention back to Baz, my eyes narrowing as I take the envelope. "How?"
"Don't ask me. I don't know. I just work here."
Baz winks, and then he turns and starts jogging away. I don't know if he's being honest or spinning a lie. The older he gets, the harder it is to tell. I open my mouth to yell after him, but he disappears between two motorhomes before I manage to get out anything more than, "But..." I sigh and turn the letter over. My eyes immediately fill with tears. I take it to the little folding table and sit down, reading and rereading the handwritten text. "To Mayhem, Dorothy, Silveria Circus, Texas." In the upper left corner, "Secret admirer, nowhere without you." There's a stamp in the upper right-hand corner, one from Croatia, but there's no mark on it from a post office. It takes me a minute to just sit back down at the table and stare at the text. I run my finger over every line of script. I didn't see his handwriting much when I stayed at his place, but there is only one person it could belong to. I tear back one slide of the flap and run a finger beneath the top edge of the envelope, careful not to damage the stamp or handwriting as I rip it open. Inside is a letter folded around something. When I take it out, a tarot card falls onto the table. The Five of Cups. I unfold the letter, carefully placing it next to the lone card.
"Dear Mayhem, you know more about tarot than I ever will, so bear with me. I might make some mistakes. Lord knows I've made plenty already. I want to start with the Five of Cups, not to look into the future, but to talk about the past and present and the regret and sorrow the card symbolizes. I'm so sorry for the way I hurt you. You deserved more from me from day one, and I didn't think I was a good enough person to give it to you. And when I finally felt I could be that man, I was forced to let you go. It was the last thing I wanted to do, but it was the only way to keep you safe. The grief and loneliness represented by this card haunt me every day. There isn't a moment that goes by when I don't think of you. And maybe you've let us go. Maybe you've moved on. Maybe this is the only letter you'll read. I have to accept that possibility might be true. Ultimately, all I want is for you to be happy, no matter what you need to do. But I am not done fighting for you. I love you. I'm not letting you go. I never will. FK.
I take a shaky breath, wiping away the tears that trail down my cheeks. Part of me holds on to the anger and loss I still feel at being ghosted, left behind with questions that might never be answered. But another part of me wants to be warmed by the first little bit of light that seemed absent from the cold darkness of my heart these last few months. I reread the letter, over and over, until Jim knocks at my door to tell me I'm going to be late for the performance. I do my show, and then come back to my trailer and read it again, until I can recite it from memory. It's on my shelf next to my bed, so it's the last thing I see when I fall asleep. When I wake up the next morning, it's the first thing I grab, touching it just to make sure it's real. The next week, there's another letter. another tarot card, the moon. In his letter, Fionn talks about how it symbolizes secrets and deceptions and illusions. He tells me about the things he feared, his own darkness, the secrets that he kept from his brothers. He talks about the secrets he's keeping now, too, but only in the loosest of terms. He worries about his brothers and the people he left behind. But it's the last lines of his letter I reread that night until I fall asleep.
The hardest secret I ever kept was the one I kept from you. It was not telling you how much I love you, how much that love has consumed me, even when I tried not to let it. You unraveled the life I'd convinced myself I wanted. I didn't think the man left behind was one I could trust. I thought I was keeping you safe from me by hiding those feelings away. But I was wrong. I'd give anything to go back and break every rule before the day we made them, because I know now that I loved you even then.
Another week. Another letter. Two tarot cards this time. The next week, another letter. A single card. Week after week, they keep coming, each letter accompanied by at least one card, sometimes two or three. Every letter relates to the meaning of the card sent with it. Everyone ends the same way.
I love you. I'm not letting you go. I never will.
The closer we get to the 1st of April, the more the anxiety churns in my guts. Because that's when we hit the road and start touring for the season. Maybe my last season, for real, this time. Or maybe not, I don't know. Maybe I'm clinging to this life I no longer want because it's safe. It's known. And the last time I dove headfirst into the unknown, I ended up with an edge beveler in my belly and my heart torn out of my chest. All I know for sure is that Fionn's letters have been something I've come to depend on, even on those days when I've tried to convince myself not to. I've even started replying, writing pages to fold and put into envelopes with nowhere to send them. I tell my own stories about anger and forgiveness and love and loss and maybe hope too. It might be a one-sided conversation, but there's a relief in putting those feelings onto paper and sealing them up, even if they're never read. I get a letter the day we pack up to head out on the road. It comes with the Knight of Wands. He talks about how I must be getting ready to leave soon. He knows the card can signify travel, and he wonders where I might be going. He wants to ask about my favorite places. Says he wishes he were here so we could talk.
If you've kept your fringe, you'd blow the hair from your brow as you think about it, and then your eyes would shimmer when you'd tell me about the best stops on the road.
I write back and say I wouldn't need to think about it. My favorite stop is the one where I found myself laid up in Hartford, Nebraska. I wonder about the people I got to know there. Is Nate still fighting in the Blood Brothers barn? What about Sandra and the Suture Sisters? Have they all started crocheting sex swings now? And why did we never make them form a cover band and play at a Blood Brothers fight with a name like that? Sandra and the Suture Sisters need crocheted merch. I would buy it. I miss Hartford, I say in my letter. I miss you, most of all. I seal that letter and cry myself to sleep that night. And the next morning, we set off for Archer City. It's not a long drive. Our first trip rarely is, just so we can work out the kinks with new staff and old machines and performances that are getting off the ground after a winter season at home. It will take a few weekends before we truly get into the swing of things. We spend a few extra days setting up and practicing. We run an extra night of shows. The day of teardown, I'm about to peel off my dirty, sweaty clothes and hop into my tiny shower when there's a knock at my door.
Mail delivery,
Baz says when I open the door, and he thrusts an envelope at me. My heart flips over. I reach out with a tentative hand, but he whips the letter out of reach before I can touch it.
Are these love letters from the guy who came to visit when that moron tripped on the fence and offed himself?
None of your business, I reply. I hang on to the edge of my door and reach for the paper that he flaps just beyond my grasp. I finally manage to yank it from him, but only because I think he lets me.
I've never seen you get mail on the road before.
Baz's teasing smile softens when I look up from the envelope. He's right. Some of the troop get mail forwarded by third-party services, or they pick it up from friends and relatives scattered along the route. But I've never done that. Never had a reason to.
It's nice. Dude must really like you.
With a little salute, Baz shoves his hands in his pockets and then walks away, whistling La Vie en Rose. A stupid grin must be plastered across my face, but he doesn't look back to see it. I didn't think another letter would come, but now that I have it in my hands, the relief and excitement almost overwhelm me as they compete for the space in my chest. I sit down at my table and slide the letter opener I bought in February beneath the edge of the flap.
Dear Mayhem, if I've timed this right, you'll be at your first stop. I hope it went great. I never told you that I went to see you perform in Ely for the first time after your accident. I didn't want to seem like some kind of weirdo stalker. I guess telling you about it a year later in my 14th letter that was written in a secret location and sent by Phantom Postal Service is already pretty stalkery. In retrospect, maybe I shouldn't have been so worried that you'd see me in the audience after all. The chariot card probably means a lot to you. I bet it comes up frequently in your deck with all the travel you do. It would have come up for me too that time. I got in my car and drove for 13 hours just to see you ride in that insane metal death cage. I was so fucking worried about you. I know you know what you're doing, but I wanted to be there, just in case. But it went perfectly. You were amazing. You came out of the cage and took your helmet off and held it up to the crowd. You looked so fucking proud. And I was so fucking proud of you too. Ride safe, Mayhem. I love you. I'm not letting you go. I never will. FK.
I smile at the chariot card before placing it with the others in the drawer of my nightstand. Every week, no matter where I am, no matter how busy, no matter if the show is great or a near disaster, if it's raining or sweltering hot, or one time even snowing. Every single week, Baz brings me a letter from Fionn. And then, in the last week of July, it's Jose who brings it to my door. Hi, I say, as he stands outside my RV in the evening sun, his hat in his hand. Would you like to come in?
No, pequeño gorrión. I came to give you this.
He extends an envelope to me and I drop down from the last step to take it, watching as he shifts his weight on his feet. I hike my brows in a wordless question, and for a moment he seems to deliberate, torn in a war of emotion.
What are you doing here, Rose?
What do you mean? I let out a puff of a laugh as I scan the fairgrounds, gesturing toward the motorhomes and campers parked around me. I live here.
No, you don't. You exist here.
It's like a punch to the ribs, one that sucks out all my air. This is my home.
Yes, but you're not yourself here anymore. You don't seem excited to perform. You haven't even set up your tarot tent since we started the tour.
If you need me to read tarot, I will, I say, folding my arms across my chest.
I don't need you to. It's just that it used to bring you joy. And others, too. You know, there was this woman named Lucy at the last stop who found me to ask if you were still doing readings.
My throat tightens. Lucy?
Lucy Cranwell. Had 3 kids with her. She said she saw you in Hartford. That you gave her a reading that changed her life. Her whole life, pequeño gorrión. She wanted to say thank you.
Why didn't you come find me? Jose shrugs, giving me a melancholy smile.
I didn't think you wanted to be found. At least, not by anyone but him,
he says, with a nod to the letter in my hand. I drop my arms from my chest. He's right. I haven't opened my tent since we hit the road. I've been scared of how much my need for vigilante justice ended up costing the people I love. How much it cost me. But in my grief, I forgot how much it gave to people who need the kind of help that's not easily asked for. I look down at the envelope in my hand, knowing there will be another tarot card inside. And I can't help but wonder if it's time to become the sparrow again.
You're right,
Jose says.
This will always be your home, but it doesn't have to be. I got a letter too.
When I tilt my head and furrow my brow, Jose spins his cap in his hands.
Dr. Kane said he was sorry that he didn't take good care of you like I asked him to that day we met in the hospital. And he said he would spend every day for the rest of his life trying to make up for it. He told me not to tell you that part. He wanted to tell you himself.
I smile through a watery film. You're such a gossip.
That's part of the reason why I run such a good circus. I'm in everybody's business,
Jose says with a wink. He grins, but his smile slowly turns melancholy.
He wants me to give you time off so he can see you. He loves you, Rose. We will always be here for you. Of course we will. But this,
he says, gesturing to the white paper clutched too tightly in my grip.
This could also be your home, if you let it. Maybe it's time to go. I think you want to, don't you?
Do I don't know. Holding these letters in my hands and reading pretty words that I want so desperately to believe is one thing. Standing in front of the man who shattered my heart is another. It's been 9 months since I last saw him. He's probably so different now. Maybe he's not the only one. Indecision must be written in the tears that cling to my lashes. I catch the shine in Jose's eyes too before he draws me into an embrace.
Go, Rose. And if you don't come back, I wish you well.
I nod, press my eyes closed, listen to his heart as we sway in the summer sun.
And take the raccoon with you. She keeps getting into the churro batter. Do you know how many batches I've thrown out?
I laugh, though it's half-hearted. When he pulls away, Jose frames my face and presses a kiss to my forehead.
I love you like a daughter, Pequeño Gorrión. That will never change.
I love you too, Jose. I give him a melancholy smile and he gifts me with a flourish of a bow in return. And then he puts his hat on, shoves his hands into his pockets, and ambles away. When he disappears from view, I enter my motorhome, my fingers trembling as I grab the letter opener and slide onto the seat. I unfold the letter and the star tarot lands on the table.
Dear Mayhem, I can't be sure you're reading these messages, but this is my favorite card. When I first bought this deck and thought of you as I shuffled the cards and turned over the first one, the star is what appeared. I didn't know for sure what that meant at the time, but I felt like it represented hope. Like you were my North Star. And now, the part of the journey where I have to stay an ocean away is finally coming to an end. If I'm right, and all these stars align, you'll be reading this in Ellsworth, Maine. And if you want to meet me, I'll be waiting every day at Lookout Rock. I'll stay at Cove Crest Cottages, but I'll wait from dawn to dusk at the lookout for you. I hope you come, so I can prove to you that every word, every letter, is true. I love you. I'm not letting you go. I never will. FK.
I set the letter down and pick up the star card. He drew this card from a deck and thought about me. He hoped these letters would knit some kind of connection between us, but he had nothing to go on but a feeling. And that's the only thing he's had to hold on to all these months. I look out the window toward the fairgrounds, watching the Ferris wheel spin against the sky. And I just keep watching, even after the lights go out.
Three of Swords. Fionn. The sun is setting behind me, scattering orange and pink flashes of light on the ocean waves. The contract with Leander might be finished, at least for now, but the memories of it haunt me like a film over the world. I've been looking at the sea from morning to night for the past 5 days, and in some ways, I'm not sure how much I've really seen it. I've seen wounds I've sewn over the last several months. I've made unexpected friendships, and I've seen the faces of those same people twisted with pain and suffering. I've seen broken bones and gunshots and torn flesh. I've seen death, but I've also seen Rose. No matter how deep the darkness dragged me, memories of Rose have been there to warm the night. I've seen her face as I've watched the sea. I've heard her laugh. I felt her kiss on my lips, the give of her flesh beneath my hands. But they've only been memories, and the hope of seeing her again feels like it's drifting out to sea. I look at my watch and my heart drops, scraping bone on its way to the cold stone beneath my boots. She should have gotten my letter 3 days ago. I came early, just in case. But Lookout Rock is 30 minutes away from Ellsworth, maybe 45 if she's driving Dorothy. It's close enough that she could have taken her motorcycle and made it here even faster if she wanted. My head drops as I take a deep breath of ocean air and pick up the backpack lying at my feet. With one last look at the sea, I turn. The backpack drops from my hand as my eyes land on a person who could be an apparition. Rose. She's so beautiful that the breath flees from my lungs. Her dark hair shifts in the breeze. It's just like the last time I saw her. Fringe that skims her brows. Waves that caress her jaw. Her mahogany eyes drill right into me, tearing back layers as though she can see every sin I've stacked up around my soul. She's wearing her leather jacket and a low-cut tank top beneath it. Black jeans and motorcycle boots. She looks tough as hell. But it's not just her clothes or the way she stands with her hands buried in the pockets of her jacket. There's a hard edge to her expression. No teasing spark in her gaze. No laugh at the ready. No smile or warmth in her eyes. I know I did what I had to do to keep her safe. But this is the first time I've really seen how badly I've broken her to do it. I'm so... I nearly choke on my words. Take a deep breath. Start again. I'm so happy you're here. It's good to see you. I feel like I'm unraveling from the inside out. But Rose, she's unreadable. The woman who has always lived wide open with her emotions on display.
You look different.
I glance down at my clothes, run a hand through my hair. It's still short, but a little longer than the last time we saw each other, a bit less refined. There's more stubble on my face, probably some dark circles beneath my eyes from the sleepless nights I've had worrying that she wouldn't come. I don't know about the rest of me, but she must see something. You look the same. Beautiful. I take a single step closer. Rose doesn't move. I wasn't sure you'd come.
Me neither.
She replies, shifting her gaze away from me toward the sea. For a long moment she stays silent, her expression hard.
I needed some time to think.
Rose is not the type to sit and stew on things. She's the type to jump in and deal with the consequences later. I'm glad you came, I say, and she nods but keeps her eyes from mine. A swallow shifts in her throat. Though her expression doesn't change, I can see how much she's struggling beneath a mask of indifference. I feel like my heart is left behind on the stone, my chest hollow, scraped clean. I have something for you. When I reach down for my bag, I dart a glance her way. It's a little bit of a relief to catch her watching with more interest than she wants to admit, judging by the way she stiffens when her eyes connect. My lips twitch with a smile that she doesn't see as I rummage in my bag. When I straighten, I hold an envelope in my hand, but I don't offer it to her. I open it instead. The last card of the deck, I say as I withdraw only the card and hold it out for her to take, the envelope and a folded letter clutched in my other hand. There's a question in her furrowed brow, but she takes the card and looks at the image. She knows tarot. She knew this would be the last one left. The lovers. She doesn't say anything, just looks down at the card, letting her hair obscure as much of her face as it can. I unfold the letter. Dear Rose, it's so good to be able to finally use your name, because that means I'm home now. Rose's nose twitches and she sniffs but still doesn't look up from the card. I'm sorry for everything I've put you through. I couldn't tell you where I was or what I was doing because it was just too dangerous. I couldn't bear the thought of someone finding their way to you. Even writing you these notes was a risk. I've never written letters to anyone before, but there were days when it felt like knowing you might be holding the same paper and reading the same words kept me alive. When I glance up from the letter, she's watching me, a shine in her eyes. My fingers tremble as adrenaline floods my veins, my gaze lingering for a moment on the end of the line of a tattoo that runs the length of my left forearm, one of her heart's rhythms, traced with precision from a photo I took of her EKG as she slept in the hospital. The lover's card represents choices in relationships, and the choices I made 9 months ago were the hardest ones I've ever had to make. I had to break your heart to save you. I had to leave to love you, and I want to spend the rest of my life making up for the time we lost. I'm asking you to choose us, Rose Evans. I promise to spend every day doing everything I can to make you happy. There's no one else I'll ever love but you. So no matter what you choose, I'm not letting you go. I never will. I lower my hand to my side. A tear breaches Rose's dark lashes and slides down her cheek. She's staring down at the card again as though it might tell her the future all on its own. Her lip trembles. I would give anything to touch her, to kiss her, but I'm just not sure if too much damage has been done and too much time has passed. Rose wipes the tears away, but more follow.
I liked your letters,
she whispers.
That one was my favorite.
Hope soars in my chest, so big it chokes me, yet so fragile I think a single breath could break it. Mine too.
I've been...
Rose's voice cracks. I take one small step closer, but she shakes her head and clears her throat.
You hurt me.
I know. I'm so sorry.
But I know it's my fault, too. I was the one who antagonized Matt Cranwell in the first place. None of this would have happened if I hadn't done that.
No, Rose. I'm glad you did. She meets my eyes, finally, and it feels like a relief when she does. I never would have met you otherwise. I'd still be stuck trying to live in a box that I was never meant to be in. That's one thing that being away has confirmed. That the idea of the life I thought I wanted was just that, an idea. And despite testing it out for a long time, it never fit. The only time anything started to feel right was when you came along. Though her expression is still troubled, Rose nods. She keeps nodding, as though it's hard to stop, until finally she tilts her head and shrugs. She shuffles on her feet, ruffles her hair. It takes her a minute to even glance at me, her damp lashes shining in the dim light.
So, what does choosing you, what does that entail, exactly?
I can't help the stupid grin that erupts on my face, though I try my best to subdue it. I think it's whatever you want it to be.
Well, but...
She shakes her head and looks out to the sea. A crease notched between her brows.
I like cuddling. We'd have to permanently dissolve that rule.
I take another step closer. She's nearly within reach. My hand aches with the need to touch her, but I stop myself from moving closer. I like cuddling.
I like PDA, holding hands and shit.
I want to hold your hand.
Dorothy only has one bed. I'm not unfolding the sleeper sofa. It's a pain in the ass.
Perfect. I don't want separate beds.
And you can't keep telling Barbara she has rabies. She doesn't like that.
You have Barbara? I ask, and she gives me a faint nod. I thought she was performing with the poodles.
There were some...
Rose pauses, her gaze lifting to the sky as she considers her words.
Incidents? With churros? And maybe one or two with the hot dog stand.
I sigh dramatically, but only to test out her reaction. Sure enough, her eyes slice to mine and narrow. I won't tell her she's rabid, I say, laying a palm across my heart. I promise. Rose's arms fold tight across her middle, the card still clutched in one hand. She juts her chin out and blows a puff of air into her fringe. I've imagined that exact quirk so many times over the last few months that it feels like a punch to the chest to see it happen right in front of me.
Danny and Renegade totally deserved to win Surviving Love.
I bite down on a laugh. I don't know if I can co-sign that one. Rose levels me with a sharp glare through a film of tears.
Okay. Danny and Renegade deserve their win, even though his made-up name sucked and his actual name is Brian, and I'm also 99% sure they cheated on that last challenge with the fish.
Fair,
she says with an eye roll. We fall into a long silence as she fiddles with the card and weighs her thoughts. Part of me wants to crash into her and wrap her in a crushing embrace. But I can almost hear the war going on behind her eyes. The fear of being hurt a second time can be paralytic. My circumstances might have been different, but I know the power of heartbreak's poison. I know that even if she does choose us, it's going to take time and maybe a little space to heal. So I don't ask anything more from her. I don't press. I just wait as long as it takes.
I liked that time we kissed,
Rose finally says, and the first hint of doubt creeps into her expression as her gaze finally lands on me and sticks.
We'd have to dissolve that rule permanently, too.
Thank God, because I fucking hate that rule. I'd like to break that one first, if you'd let me.
Her mask comes undone as she nods, every emotion bursting through her broken facade. Tears blur my vision as I rush to close the distance between us. I've imagined this moment 1,000 times over the last 9 months, even when I tried to stop myself in case it never came true. The feeling of her damp cheeks beneath my palms, the taste of salt and sweetness on her lips, the warmth of her breath on my skin, her scent, notes of spiced chocolate on the sea air. The reality of actually touching her is so far beyond what I'd truly let myself wish for. So I drown in her. I press my lips to hers and thank every god I can think of when her tongue caresses mine. Everything inside me that felt misplaced is realigned when she wraps her arms around my neck and her body molds to mine like she was always meant to fit. I love you, Rose, I say. When we pull apart and I press my forehead to hers, I'm sorry. She doesn't have words, only emotion, just a shake of her head. We wrap each other in an embrace. I hold on, and she holds me back. It's starting to get dark by the time we finally let go, with just enough light to see the path that leads back to the inn where fairy lights line a covered porch facing the sea. A storm of nerve circles my guts. All my medical training and high-pressure situations, and now, this time spent working with some seriously fucked-up people employed by Leander, all that cultivated calm seems to fly out the window when Rose looks at me with her dark, shining eyes. It's as though the thought of anything to do with her has me reduced to a pit of anxiety. I swallow and try not to tense as I point toward the inn just down the cliffs from where we stand. Did you want to stay with me? Rose doesn't answer. My heart folds in on itself.
It's got a nice view of the ocean.
She watches me, unmoving.
It has a pretty decent breakfast buffet and waffles. You love waffles.
I grip a hand to the back of my neck when her brows raise like she's expecting more.
It only has one bed, though.
Finally, her smile breaks free, as though she'd trapped it just to watch me squirm.
That was the selling point I was waiting for, Doc.
We walk to the inn under the brightening stars, hand in hand. Every step we take makes me feel like I'm living someone else's life. Like I could blink and learn this is all a dream, some delirium that will wear off, and then I'll realize she was never here in the first place. And for a moment, I think it's going to be an even worse fate when we get to the parking lot of the inn, and she looks toward Dorothy to slip her hand free of mine.
Hold on a minute,
Rose says, taking a step back, and then another.
I'll be right back.
I nod. She gives me a flash of an unsure smile and then turns away, walking to the motor home with her hands shoved in her pockets. After a few brief moments inside, she returns with a backpack slung over one shoulder.
Just had to feed Barbara and get some stuff for the night.
Of course. I hold out a hand and she takes it. Her touch is still hesitant, which seems unlike the Rose Evans I know, but I know it will take time to earn back the trust I tarnished. So I just stay steady, opening the door for her when we get to the inn, leading her to the room on the second floor that faces the sea. When we get inside, she goes to the windows and watches the ocean, sliding the backpack from her shoulder and onto one of the chairs.
It's a nice view,
she says, not turning away from the black waves that melt into the horizon.
Yeah, it is, I say, watching her. Do you want something to drink? I've got tea, bourbon.
Bourbon would be nice, thanks.
I nod, but she doesn't see, then turn to the small kitchenette to take the only two glasses from the shelf and fill them. I'm pouring the first drink when she speaks, her words turning my veins to crystals of ice.
Dear Fionn,
she says, her voice barely more than a whisper. I turn around, a slow pivot on my heel. She has a letter in her hands. The edges of it quiver in her grip.
I got your letters. I keep opening them. I finally decided I should write back. I've never gotten letters like yours before, and I've never written to anyone. It's almost ironic that they have nowhere to go.
Rose's eyes dart to mine, and I can't move. I'm rooted to the floor.
I had a dream while I was in the hospital that some broken hearts can't be sewn back together. And I wondered if mine would be like that too. I thought so for a long time. And then your first letter came. I was angry. I felt empty. But getting that letter was like receiving the first stitch. It hurt, but it helped too. Everyone since then has closed a little bit of the wound, even on the days when I didn't want it to. The card you sent me today is the Three of Swords. You talked in your letter about how it represented heartbreak. There was pain and loss those last days we were together, and in the ones since, you said. You worried about how I was feeling, but when I opened the letter and the card fell out, it was reversed. It means that the knives fall from the heart. Healing begins. That's what your letter meant to me. Another stitch in a wound. So I hope you keep writing to me, and I'll keep writing to you. I hope we heal ourselves and each other. I hope we'll stitch back together. Because I love you, Fionn. I'm not letting you go. I never will. Love, Rose.
She lifts her eyes to mine. And though I take a step in her direction, it's Rose who closes the distance. When I have her in my arms, everything else in the world seems to fall away.
I meant it, Rose, I whisper into her hair. I'm not letting you go.
She nods against my chest.
Me neither.
For a long while, we stay that way, swaying to the music of heartbeats and breath. When we finally part, Rose takes off her jacket. I give her the bourbon and have my own. We sit on the bed and she reads me her letters one by one. We talk, we laugh, we fall asleep in each other's arms. We start the slow process of stitching back together. For once, I'm awake the next morning before Rose. I write her a letter. This one is about happiness, relief, gratitude. I end it the way I always do, with a promise that I will never let her go. Then I leave it on the pillow before I slip from the room to get her a coffee and waffles from downstairs. When I get back to the room, she's in the shower, her reply note already waiting on the little table next to the bed. Her letter isn't just about happiness or relief. It's about want and need. It's an invitation. I leave the coffee and breakfast in the kitchen and then I join her in the shower, and we make love beneath the spray, savoring every kiss, every touch, every whispered word that was left unwritten. Every day we write each other letters. Every evening we read them out loud. We talk through the way we feel. Sometimes we make love. Sometimes we fuck. Sometimes we fight. Or we laugh. Or we cry. But every day we heal. We leave the inn after a few days, and then we hit the road with Dorothy and no real plan of where to go. We just stop at different campgrounds. Some evenings we meet random travelers, sit around a fire, Rose glowing in the flickering light. Her laugh gets easier as time passes, and so does mine. Other nights we keep to ourselves and talk about the life we both left behind in Nebraska and the future that lies ahead. She's ready to give Boston another try, she says, if I'm ready too. And I am. I know how much Leander would love to have me close as a physician on his payroll. He's texted me 5 times since the Croatian contract finished to offer me a permanent job in Boston, even offering to help me set up a legitimate clinic of my own in the city so I can be there if he needs me. He could force me into it with the mountain of evidence he still holds in his grasp, of course. But truthfully, I'm ready to say yes. And though I think she's trying not to let on, I know how much Rose wants to be closer to Lark and Sloane. I can hear it in her voice, see it in the way the idea lights up her eyes.
But maybe we could still take Dorothy out to stretch her legs in the summer,
she said last night when she climbed into bed. Yeah, I'd said, pulling her against me. She laid her head against my chest and I pressed a kiss to her hair. I really liked that plan. And now, 3 weeks after our reunion in Ellsworth, it feels like we're finally where we're meant to be. On the same path. We're walking side by side, our hands clasped, our shoes crunching on gravel as we draw closer to the cabin where Sloane's BMW and Lachlan's vintage Dodge Charger are parked. Barbara ambles along beside us on a leash and harness, sniffing the ground in her endless hunt for contraband snacks. The lights are on inside the cottage, illuminating the scrub grass that slopes toward a moonlit lake. Rose squeezes my hand and I look down my shoulder at her.
You okay?
She asks. Yeah, I reply, giving her the most relaxed smile I can manage. She's not buying it, of course. Her eyes narrow on me as they sweep across every detail of my face. It's just been so long since I've seen Rowan and Lachlan. I'm excited, maybe a bit nervous. My admission seems to appease her as she brings her other hand to circle my forearm.
They're going to be so excited to see you.
Yeah, I just feel bad to have left it so long. I could have messaged them when I first got home. Rose considers this, her head tilting side to side.
Yeah, but it was okay to take some time too. You need